The third one is turn it around to the opposite. And I came up with, I should respect me. Now, I'm not sure if this is quite opposite. Some of these get a little fuzzy, confusing to me. But my example was, I should respect me, yes.
Person.
My kids should pick up after me. That's a joke. Again, you don't have to believe these. I don't have to pick up after them, because if I don't want to do anything I don't decide to do, I won't. I'm not really outraged. On a scale of outrageous, that's about a 2, so I'm not really outraged. Katie suggests that you always do these 4 inquiries before you go to the turnaround, because without an open mind to these possibilities, these turnarounds can feel harsh or shameful. The judgment turned back to yourself can set up self-defensiveness, which closes your mind to solving anything. So if you're open to the questions and see the other side of the issue, then the turnaround will be an additional revelation rather than a mental gymnastic. Once you've learned to go inside for your own answers and open yourself to a turnaround, you'll see that most everything you think you see on the outside is really a projection of your own thinking. We see who we are by seeing who we think other people are. And in discovering the innocence of the people that you judge, you come to recognize your own innocence. Katie says after successfully doing the work for a while, you're going to actually look forward to problems that pop up so that you can process them without stress and defensiveness, and rather than hopelessly applying willpower to force the situation in your life. If you live with the person you've judged, you may as well look forward to the problems as you go. It makes life easier for both of you. If you don't live with a person, you probably find yourself living with them in your mind. So you may as well look forward to that. It's no longer necessary to wait for people or situations to change in order to experience peace and harmony. Whether you go through life with lots of stress or with peace and acceptance, the trip is the same. The difference is how the journey is made. After you've done the work on other people, she suggests you can do it on yourself. And she says the order, though, is important, that you do the work on others first, because the ego puts up defenses if you start with yourself. So you need to practice. Trying to love and approve of yourself can be just as painful as seeking the love of others, and the results are just as unsatisfying. You think other people think there's something wrong with you because you think there's something wrong with you. And by seeking to gain their love and approval, you're trying to stop them from thinking what you're thinking. Right? In every inquiry about painful relationships, you discover that the stress is caused by your own thinking. Quote from Katie. Let me say this real quick. If you haven't undone painful thoughts about yourself, you can get into a bubble bath, light candles, recite positive affirmations, pamper yourself in every way, and once you're out of the tub, the same thoughts will come back to haunt you. It's like staging a seduction, only you're the one trying to seduce you.
So using the example that I gave earlier about the healing codes, I have an illusion that says that I'm not worth much, I'm not worth, I have a lot of worth. Mm-hmm. So my son doesn't go grocery shopping the second I ask him to. I ask him to pick up the milk. He doesn't do it. He must disrespect me. He hates me.
Mm-hmm.
He must think badly of me. So those are my thoughts.
Right.
About myself projecting onto him.
Right.
And I continue to do that, and it's got nothing to do with him.
Right. It's all about you.
Mm-hmm. All mine.
Yep. Good for you that you've seen that. Thanks for those examples, too. I appreciate that. Okay, a good place to start in questioning parts about yourself that stress you out is to question what you're most ashamed of. Secrets cry out for inquiry. You can't be free, so you're stop the hiding from yourself. So the first thing you could do is to write down what I'm most ashamed of is, or what I don't want you to know about me is. You might, for example, say, what I'm most ashamed of is that sometimes I hate my kids and I just look for excuses to bitch at them. I like being a martyr and I like trying to make my kids feel guilty. That might be a statement of shame of what you're feeling about yourself. You can also write down what you think this means. And this means that I'm a bad mother and a person. Inquire into each of these meanings. Is it true that I'm a bad mother and a person because I feel this way sometimes? Ask yourself for your own truth and treat each question like a deep meditation. Ask yourself and gently wait for the heart's answer to surface. Turn around your responses, even if they're difficult, and find three genuine ways in which the opposite is as true or truer. You may discover that everything you thought it meant isn't necessarily true, like what Lorraine's talking about. I don't think I'm a bad mother. I'm not. This is the turnaround. I'm not ashamed that I sometimes hate my kids. I'm not supposed to always love my kids until I do. Is this as true or truer for you? This inquiry allows the mind to give you other truths that can set you free to love them or not, to be a very good parent regardless of how you're feeling about them in the moment. And by freeing yourself of this parental guilt, you can find your love naturally. And you can really hear your children and be with them, and you don't have to do or be anything you're not. Katie has a great quote about being ourselves that can turn be, you could turn this into a meditation. I think when I think of this, I think of Lorraine for some reason, that she would say this. I'm the perfect one to be me, and no one else can be it. I must be this height to be me, exactly this weight to be me, and exactly this age. That's the requirement to be me. And there are two ways of being me. One is to hate it, and one is to love it. Since I don't have a choice but to be me, which will it be? I'm perfectly myself. And when you love yourself, you love the person you're always with. Yep.
I hope I did.
Yep. That's really good. Katie says if you really want to be free, criticism from other people can be a gift. Feeling hurt or wanting to defend yourself means there's something you don't accept and love about yourself. It's the part you want to hide. The worst that can happen is that you're hearing the truth. And isn't that what you want? No matter what anyone says or about you or to you, if you experience stress, then you're the one who's suffering in the moment. Stress is a signal that it's time to question your own thinking. When someone criticizes you, don't try to rebut and defend. Just settle into it and ask yourself, is it true? Could she be right? Can I see how someone might see me that way? An interesting response would be, thank you for letting me know. You could be right. Notice what that does to the argument and the feelings involved. The saying goes that friends are people who agree with you. You ever thought about that? Your friends are people who agree with you. And your enemies and your family are those who don't. Quoting Katie again, for the personality or ego, love is nothing more than agreement. If I agree with you, you love me. And the minute I don't agree with you, the minute I question one of your sacred beliefs, I become your enemy. You divorce me in your mind. Then you start looking for reasons why you're right, and you stay focused outside yourself. And when you focus outside yourself and believe that your problem is caused by somebody else, rather than by attachment to your story that you're believing in the moment, then you are the victim. A couple things to keep in mind about criticism. Number one, the person who's criticizing you is just telling you what they think. Telling a person they shouldn't think or feel that way is futile. Like if someone says, I don't like you because of blah, 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 and then I say, well, you shouldn't think that. It's futile to tell them how they should feel. A person, we think what we think and we feel what we feel. And their opinions of you are just their observations. And they don't have any meaning for you except that which you give it. And that's true of everything. That's A Course in Miracles quote. How does it go? I give meaning to, or things only have meaning to that which I give it, or something similar to that. Yeah.
There's another saying, it's none of my business what you think of me.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly, yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, that's the next statement. You're out of your business when you worry about what others think of you. If you live your life and let people form whatever impression they want of you without your engineering, and that's what they're going to do anyway, you open yourself to be responsible for your own happiness and live the highest you know. Now, the second thing to keep in mind about criticism is when it's not true of you, it's probably a projection from the other person. And it's about them and not about you. Finally, a word about forgiveness. Forgiveness, this is a neat quote, forgiveness is giving up the hope that the past can be different. Forgiveness is a hope that the past can be different. Forgiveness and inner peace is possible when you realize the truth about projections, about your underlying beliefs, about your reactions to others, based on your past experiences, about minding your own business, about the fact that we're all doing our best. You realize that your suffering is largely your own doing. Look at your thoughts, ask questions, see what applies to you, and set yourself free. Now, we do have the time, if you'd like, I did print out an actual conversation inquiry that Katie did with a member of an audience in a workshop to give you an example of this inquiry process. Would you like to hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. The following dialogue with Katie takes place before an audience of 200 people. And Mary is the woman who's sitting opposite of her on the stage. They sit in chairs opposite each other, has filled out a one-page worksheet that she wrote down her thoughts about somebody who upset her. She doesn't hold back. She's a forceful woman, about 40 years old, slim, attractive, dressed in expensive-looking clothes. At the beginning of the dialogue, her anger and impatience are palpable. This is Mary reading the statement. I hate my husband because he drives me crazy. Everything about him, including the way he breathes. What disappoints me is I don't love him anymore, and our relationship is a charade. I want him to be more successful, to not want to have sex with me, to get in shape, to get a life outside of me and the kids, to not touch me anymore, and to be more powerful. My husband shouldn't fool himself that he's good at our business. He should create more success. My husband's a wimp. He's needy and lazy, and he's fooling himself. I refuse to keep living a lie. I refuse to keep living my relationship as an imposter. So she was very judgmental.
Projecting.
Yeah. And but again, that's what you need to do. You got to get it out. It's like Dr. Phil says, you can't solve what you don't acknowledge. That's one of his favorite sayings. You've got to acknowledge.
You can't see what you can't acknowledge.
Yeah. You can't solve it, you can't see it if you don't acknowledge it. So that's the first step. Acknowledge it. Get it out. You don't have to show it to anybody, and don't. Just get it out there. And be petty and mean and childish and bitchy. Just bitchy.